everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Potions and Potpourri. We're your gal pals here with another episode. We're a podcast that talks about stuff. We interview people sometimes. We like to make things up on the fly every now and then where we call those segments potions. And the other little thing that we like to do is life plays. So we got to collab with some friends of ours over at Even Footing Games to bring you a very special game of Thirsty Sword Lesbians. We had the episode zero out for your listening pleasure before all of the Thirsty Sword Lesbian episodes dropped over on Even Footing Games. But if you want to listen to the whole story, be sure to go over and check out the Even Footing Games Presents podcast to hear the four episodes that we released and get a listen of the full story that Keisha wrote and thirst mastered for us. Is that the right verbiage? Mastered.
It's gay mastered.
Okay.
Well, I think it's actually gay mastered in the book.
But there's another right. Thirst master.
Thirstmaster is what Rick made up for Monster Hearts.
I feel like I've seen Thirstmaster associated with Thirsty Sword Lesbians too, though.
Fair.
But I think it's both. But Gay Mastered a story for us, Keisha did.
Yeah.
And so we're back again to talk about the game itself and just kind of go over some thoughts and feelings and reviews and just see how we felt. But speaking of Even Footing Games, one of our guests today is our friend Aaron from Even Footing Games. Aaron, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit?
I'm Aaron from Even Footing Games, and I write games and do businessy things over there. That's what I do.
Nice. That's true. You do a lot more than that, but... And then, of course, we have... our other co-host, Keisha. Hi, Keisha.
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm here. Hi. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you for being on your own show.
Yes.
Good to be back.
Thank you for having me. Oh, thank you. Oh, my God, you're so welcome. Oh, wow. You're so nice. I know.
This is the Keisha show now.
This is terrible.
But yeah, so we kind of opened the floor up to the lovely folks that we played this game with to see if anybody wanted to come on and kind of do a recap or like a wrap episode of the game that we just played. So Erin wanted to come on and talk with us a little bit. Yeah, we're so happy to have her and just kind of talk about this game a little bit. So let's jump right into it, guys. So Thirsty Sword Lesbians, for those of you at home that don't know, is a Powered by the Apocalypse game. And those are all typically published by Evil Hat.
It's not the case. Oh. They can be published by anybody. Magpie publishes lots of them.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Then. Okay.
Yep. It's just anybody can do it.
Well, let me put the caveat on it. The other Powered by the Apocalypse games that Evil Hat has released are games like Monster Hunter and Blades in the Dark.
Blades in the Dark is its own system.
Yep. Great,
Blades
thank
in
you.
The Dark is its own system.
I don't know what
we
I'm
know
talking
what
about.
We're talking about.
But other Evil Hat games include those as well as some of the other Powered by Apocalypse games, but not all of them. So thanks for clarifying that for us, Aaron.
Sorry.
No, it's good. It's good to know.
No, yes, it is.
You know, I assumed all of one system would be published by the same like company, but you know, when they're indie like that, I guess you can kind of share.
I don't know who is the publisher of Apocalypse World, which is the system that all Powered by the Apocalypse games are based off of.
Oh.
But they made it open source. So that's why all these games are Powered by the Apocalypse.
Cool.
Because they use the Apocalypse World system.
Okay. I did not know that. A little bit of the Powered by Apocalypse lore for you from Aaron.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm learning so many things.
I guess it makes sense that if you're a business director of your own indie game company, that you would know a lot about other indie game companies. That tracks.
It's interesting. Yeah. And I've also been doing the game show lately. And so I have a lot of trivia about indie games right now.
Right. The game show is one of Even Footing Games' many projects out there. You can find it on YouTube and any other format, Aaron?
Nope, just YouTube.
You can find it on YouTube. Even Footing Games Presents.
No, it's called Game That Name.
Game That Name.
Game also. That Name.
But yeah. Anyways, Thirsty Sword Lesbians is a narrative RPG. So very roleplay focused. Powered by the Apocalypse system, which uses playbooks instead of like full character creation. They have mostly fully fledged character playbooks that you can choose from and pick, and it kind of gives you just like a structure for a character to play. I mean, you can add a lot of your own details and flair and stuff, and it gives you a lot of choices for that. But yeah. And we got a little bit of knowledge about the Powered by the Apocalypse system and also some publishing knowledge that we didn't have before, so we appreciate that.
It's a neat system. Just to jump off right off the bat, it's kind of funny because, like, kind of looking back on our game, to me, it was very obvious that I'm so used to D&D and, like, how everything is played with that. So playing a different system where it's, especially this one, where you're not rolling for, like, every little thing, it was different. But it's good, though, because it allows for more role play, I guess, and it moves things along a little bit better because things just happen as each player, each person says it, you know? You're all telling the story, and it's only really when there's, like, a certain kind of conflict or something like that, that's when you may end up doing some kind of role or some kind of special ability or something. So that was kind of nice to play something like that. It was a change up, you know? And the thing that I found most interesting overall for playing that system is the playbooks themselves. The way I understand it is you pick the playbook that kind of fits the character you have in mind, or like kind of either the mindset or just kind of where they are in their life. But at the end, when I was reading through some of them, they say that, oh, perhaps you start as this playbook, perhaps you start as the spooky witch, but then after, you know, you have a few adventures or something, maybe you have a new playbook. Maybe you're no longer a spooky witch. Like, your life or your decisions or your something about you has changed enough that you're now an infamous. Instead, this fits more for your character. And so maybe at some point you're going to be this playbook. So it's not really set where you're stuck with that playbook, you know, like you only level up in just that playbook throughout the entire campaign or whatnot. You can kind of evolve or trade or kind of switch to a different playbook. And I thought that was super interesting.
Wow. I didn't really realize that at all. Is it like you can switch at any time, or is it like you do like the 3 level ups that you get and then you can move?
Most times in Powered by the Apocalypse, you're going to, once you get a certain number of experience points, you can do a couple of different things. So one is you can improve your stats. 2 is you can take a new thing from your playbook. But then 3rd is that you could take one from any playbook.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's kind of, yeah, mixing
playbooks a little bit. Cool.
Whoa. Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's more. Yeah, that makes more sense. I may have misunderstood it a little bit, but yeah, it is neat that you can, like, take different parts from different playbooks and kind of maybe better build your character, because they may not be just all this one thing within that one playbook. They might be like, oh, well, it kind of makes sense that they have a little bit of this, you know, and a little bit of that, and kind of mix it up. But yeah, I thought that was really, really fascinating.
That is really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the system in general, though. Pretty cool.
And you were saying that, you know, you really like the way the game is written, where the dice aren't the driving factor as much, and, you know, that's on purpose, obviously. The role play is a driving factor. Like, that's what telling the story, it's all the playbook moves are laid out, is very, like, role play narrative based decisions and stuff like that. And I think there was some really good role play in here. But before we get any further, I just want Keisha very briefly to summarize the story, because Keisha wrote the story for us, and it was very immersive, and it was a really nice story to kind of play through that really allowed us, I think, to get a lot of role-playing in. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Keisha?
Yeah, so the story in a nutshell is everybody was playing a character who was knighted as a Gal Paladin. And basically they all took a sort of oath to go out and seek those who may need help. And they follow, you know, the ideals of like freedom, equality, and love are like the main three ones that they try to uphold and spread throughout the universe for others to also attain. So you guys went on a particular mission to a world that was quite literally leached of all color. Like, it's this bleak gray spot on this planet that is just slowly beeping all of the color throughout the rest of the world and everything around it. All of the people there were once those who all had the hues of the rainbow and all kind of like represented the different colors throughout that rainbow. You know, they were free to express themselves and they took pride in their individuality and all of this, but then that was all taken and now they were just gray. So you guys went there to investigate it and see if perhaps they couldn't be helped or freed from this grayness that was happening. So we had some characters that were actually from that world originally and kind of had their own inner conflict of like going back to that place that they had fled from, you know, and re-seeing it and trying to push back against what the gray did in their own lives. And then we had some other characters who were brand new to this world and just trying to do their best in bringing back the color. So yeah, that's basically the story in a nutshell, and it was a lot of fun watching you guys interacting with each other, with your characters. There were a lot of cute moments, and some challenges were presented, and you guys overcame them spectacularly, for sure. And at the very end of it, you succeeded in bringing back the colors to that land, and finding colors within yourselves, in a sense. And yeah, that's my story.
That was great. I feel like the important thing that I meant to mention when I was trying to introduce the game and we got sidetracked by the Powered by the Apocalypse conversation, which was great, by the way, was that Thirsty Sword Lesbians is super gay. It's a game about being queer and sword play and friendship and love. Those are like the basic tenets of this game. And we were actually really proud to be able to present an all-queer cast to play this, which isn't hard when all of your friends are queer. But all that aside, we were out here representing, you know what I mean? But so all those things with Keisha's story tie into the fact that this game is just like super gay-coded and on purpose. And it's just really fun to play in a world like that, you know, where the patriarchy and like the typical like cishet normative guy is the villain.
Yep.
Great. Yeah, that was a nice little recap though, Keisha. And I really liked the story. I thought it was just really lovely. It's very open-ended, so we can always come back to it if we want. You know, we like did our one mission, but there's still like plenty to pursue if we're able to do like a part two of this or something. Yeah, and I think all of our characters were really special. I think that there was a lot of differences between us to make us like stand out for people to like stay interested and for us to kind of like showcase all the playbook moves and stuff.
I think I picked a very good playbook for my character, though. I was not a big fan of it. No, I just never was able to use actual playbook moves. And that may have just been my, you know, kind of poor choices. I don't know. And I felt like I had really leaned into being the infamous, but none of the playbook moves really applied in the circumstances. So that would be the only thing I would have redone over, is had a little bit different choices with my moves.
Do you know if you what other playbook you might have chosen?
I do not. I know that when I have played in the past with Keisha for a holiday game, I played the Spooky Witch, and I played it very against Spooky Witch type. And that I ended up playing, doing all the Spooky Witch moves because I was, but like this, I was trying to play very on the nose with it. And it's kind of a bummer that Kayla and I are the only ones who came on, because we were like the not actually straight, but straight men in the podcast. We were the serious ones from the planet, and the other two were the more goofy, more self-expressive ones in this
definitely,
one.
Definitely. Yeah, so just real quick, but you already said that you had the infamous playbook move.
I did, yeah.
Cedar the Barefoot, one of our players, they chose something from Advanced Lovers and Lesbians, actually, so not one of the core playbook moves, and they chose the Sun Hand, which is like this really cool magical baker. I actually really liked that playbook. That was really
neat. That was great.
It's a fun one.
And then Penny from Titterpig Academy, she chose the Nature Witch, or is it the Spooky Witch?
Spooky Witch.
Okay, the Spooky Witch, the one that can see like the ghosts and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool too, and it was cool to see another version of Spooky Witch, since we've played this a few times now, and most people choose Spooky Witch, I feel like. Yeah. She's very like goth coded. I like that one a lot.
That's a good one.
And I was the
Trickster,
thank you. I couldn't remember what it was called. I remember what it looked like though. Yeah, so the, like, don't feel your feelings are bad, kind of roguish type. Yeah.
I did have a question for you guys. How did you create your character? What was kind of the thought behind them? And what drew you to the playbook for that character? For Darren.
Oh, sorry.
My bad. No worries.
So, I mean, I definitely, like, when we started talking about this, we knew about the enforcers, and my thought was that I had read the infamous playbook, and so the idea of somebody who is so against what they like were that, and they are so against it now, I just don't know that at least the moves worked out for me that well. But the idea from the character came from the playbook. Like, I wanted to be that character. That's how the idea kind of came about, is that we had like a little idea of, oh, there are people on this world that, you know, are basically the cops and are then taking people to like brainwashing fixers, and like that would be so traumatic to have been a part of that system and then wanting to get out yourself and not even knowing if you were ever going to be able to go back and help, just because all you could do was get out.
Yeah, the Infamous is actually a really good pick for that. I played the Infamous in one of our original TSL games that we played as a one-shot. And yeah, I think that they're very coded that way too, like, you know, kind of ACAB. Yeah. But also like anti-cop sentiment and stuff. And kind of like repenting for things that they feel bad about.
Yeah.
I chose the Trickster because I read all the playbooks and I kind of felt a lot of them were too like strongly like role play centric. I don't really know if that makes a lot of sense, but like there's a lot of like stronger role play suggestions in some of the playbooks than I felt comfortable doing when I was looking through them. And then with all the information that we had from Keisha about the world, I felt like the Trickster, like having to like mask their emotions and all of that, really stuck out, because I feel like that's something that would have happened in Lackluster, aka Vivacia, for sure. That kind of like suppression of yourself. And then from there, the idea of this kind of like struggling, like non-binary person that is in this like rigid, like square system where they have to be either a he or a she, and they have to have a partner. They can only wear the same type of clothes as everybody else. And like that whole idea of it is really what kind of connected everything for me to play the Trickster.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's always interesting. I always like hearing about the thought process from how people build out their characters. You know, it's it's so interesting to see the differences that people do or what leads them to, oh, this is what it should be, like, this is the story now, and like, da 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 da, you know, I always like hearing about that.
Yeah, and we didn't really, I realize now that we didn't really talk about it a ton in the game, but in our episode zero, we talked a little bit about the three paragons and which one knighted us and why. And actually, I really liked that. I feel like that was a good kind of like moment for me to like think about like some more character development within that playbook move. So that was really cool.
Yeah. It's funny because like thinking about it too, and this is well known, I'm incapable of an actual one shot. It's impossible. I don't understand how it's done. It's just
there's so much story to tell.
My world. I know. Yeah. There's always so much more. Like, we wanted to record it in a certain amount of episodes, and it's funny because like so much was cut short from what I originally had because of course. Like, it's just impossible, like, because there were so many things, like, after we had played a few sessions, I was like, gosh, like, things, yeah, it'd be great if we could explore, like, certain things more, but there's only so much time, and also, I don't know what these guys are going to do, like, are they going to go in this direction, are they going to ignore that, and go that direction, you never know, so, like, yeah.
Yeah, I really did not expect it to take 4 episodes to get to the castle. I was like, what is happening here?
I was like, this, there's no way. With our group, there's no way we're going to actually fit into that. But we'll try. We tried.
But also, like, I'm not a game master, so I don't have a ton of experience in this. But I feel like the general rule of thumb going into a roleplay-heavy game is that you should write as little as possible, you know, and let your players just roleplay through the game and just have a few extra things to throw in there if they get stuck or if they're kind of stalling out on roleplaying. But I feel like the less you write, the better, because they're going to play the game anyways, you know?
And here's the thing, though. I think that what Keisha did in the beginning was so good. Like, that was so much good information for us to build our characters off of. And you could have had ideas, and then you could have maybe skipped any other prep besides that first thing that you wrote. And like, that might have been enough, and it might have saved you time. I tend to GM a lot of things that are like, I don't GM D&D. I don't really play D&D. But I GM a lot of different systems and almost never prepare much. And my players will even like tease me about how the fact of, oh, we like, are we gonna roll a dice, because, you know, like, should we roll one, because I can go a whole session and not ask anybody to roll anything, and that's just my style. So
yeah,
again, though, I feel like that's part of those narrative role-playing games, is that the dice are just there to solve a problem. But if you don't have a problem that needs to be solved with dice, then you don't need the dice.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially think that when you have characters and they've already given you, like, the stuff that they know how to do, and when those things come up, it doesn't make sense for, like, okay, you're a, you know, lock-picking thief person, and then, oh, I'm sorry, you rolled a 0, or, like, a 1 on your lock-pick check, and so now, by the way, you suck. And now you can't get through that door.
By the way, you suck.
Hey, I
don't know if you know this.
Not your day. You suddenly forgot how to lockpick, even though you've done it for 20 plus years of your life.
Exactly. Yeah, oh exactly. God. You are the most skilled lockpick ever. And nope, not today. So with me, in even when I did play D&D, I wouldn't make people roll for that kind of stuff, because rolling's for suckers, I think. Just tell a story with your friends and be gay. I mean, isn't that enough?
It's not enough. You don't need dice to tell you that you're gay. It turns out.
Calling all baddies to the front right now.
I know your day just got a whole lot better because The Bards is here. Baddie Bards is an actual play podcast with an all-black, trans, queer cast bringing you all the gay feels, epic adventures, and a damn good time. You can find us on all major podcast platforms, as well as Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Cash App. Not only that, you can find our talkback show, Roll for Thickness, on our coffee, where we're always having a key. So come chill with the Bards every other Friday, anywhere where you listen to podcasts. We are here now, and we will see you there.
That actually, though, is a pretty good segue, because one of the questions I had for all of us is about the mechanics of this game and, like, a little bit more loosely of Powered by the Apocalypse games. This is the only Powered by Apocalypse that I've actually played, but now that I kind of understand the, like, playbook moves and stuff, I can see how it translates. But for those of us that have played other games, how do these mechanics in this system feel to us? Do they, like, run smoothly? Do we like them? Do we not like something about them? What do you think?
I really like them. I've played quite a bit of Powered by the Apocalypse.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize. I'm just agreeing. Sorry. I know that you have played. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so I've played quite a few systems. And there, the thing about Powered by the Apocalypse that I think is that you can do so much with a system and they can still be similar, but very different. Strings are a thing that is kind of in this one and also a little bit in Monster Hearts as well. But they're a little bit mechanically different. I really like the strings in this very, very much so. I like that it's the combat is not combat. The conflict is not very, like, it doesn't have to be combat, which I think is great. I think that that's one of the things that Avatar Legends really, where it went wrong is that it felt like you had to, even though in Avatar, like, they didn't always fight, it felt very much like, oh, it's a ninja game, and if you're not doing ninja moves, then you're out of luck. And I felt like that was kind of against the whole Powered by the Apocalypse sort of system as a whole. But so I love how thematically they can be so different and they can do different things. And it's very different from playing Monster of the Week. It's very different from playing Apocalypse World. It's, you know, it's very different from system to system. And yet it's very easy to come in and pick up when you know the baseline system. Like, it's just, oh yeah, I'm going to always roll 2d6s. Like, I'm going to always have 4 stats. And that makes it pretty simple to like, you know the core mechanics so that you can focus on the role play and on your character.
That's actually really insightful. I like that a lot. I didn't realize that they varied so much between Powered by the Apocalypse games. Well, not, like, so much, but that they vary like that. That's really cool, actually.
Well, I mean, yeah, all the playbooks, there's no, I mean, the fact that they have playbooks is all the same, mm-hmm. but there's no common playbook kind of move.
Yeah, like, I assume that all, part. But, like, yeah. With the strings and everything, like, those are all different mechanics, and you said even, like, Monster Hearts has strings, but it's mechanically different, and
well, because
really
Monster
cool.
Hearts is, and while Monster Hearts is a very also queer-coded game, it is more about secret identities, whereas Thirsty Sword Lesbians is very out and proud.
Yeah, totally.
So I feel like it is a little bit more, Monster Hearts has these kind of the strings that can be sort of more manipulative, I think. Not in a, like, it sounds bad when I say that, but, like, if you're playing a witch in Monster Hearts, one of your things is you're trying to steal from everybody so that you can get strings on them because you have a connection to them. Hmm. And that really does make sense because, like, a witch is like being a collector of the strings, and the strings do the same thing here where they are helping you with roles.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But in this, like, it feels a little different. And also, I mean, there can be romance strings, and there can be, like, if you have sex with somebody, then you have a string on them. But there are whole bunches of different ways to get strings. So.
Whoa, cool. Yeah, I like the string mechanic. It's something that I'm not used to from other TTRPGs. Like, I've never played with a mechanic like this ever. So when I first learned to play Thirsty Sword Lesbians, it was kind of hard to get my head around it, because it was my first introduction to Powered by the Apocalypse. And the Strig mechanic was just, like, so out there for me. I just, like, really couldn't grasp it. But having played it a few more times, I actually really like it. I think it's a really cool mechanic to introduce, where you can give and take, like, equally or not equally with the strings, and that it helps you with your roles. And it also just, like, really drives the roleplay aspect, because a lot of the ways of getting strings is by asking direct questions of other players, or learning secrets, or, like, sharing truths.
Yeah, I agree. I like the string theory. No, that's not what I was trying to go for. The string thing. I don't know what I'm trying to say. Okay.
String theory is great.
They're great. Okay. I like that they're, like, the way I see it is that they're, like, a connection to a person. And it's interesting where it's, like, it's not necessarily you only give or take strings on someone that you're, like, in the system of Thirsty Sword Lesbians. It's not just someone you're, like, smitten with. It could be someone that you're also, like, in conflict with, you know? So there's, because it's playing on the theory of, like, heartstrings, or pulling on your heartstrings. It makes sense, you know, whether for good or for ill, or anything in between, you know? So I find that really interesting. And the thing that I really like about Thirsty Sword Lesbians is it seems like it's very heavy on, like, exploring emotions and kind of a way to kind of maybe almost explore yourself too, you know? Because I think I read somewhere in there where you can pick a playbook kind of reflective of you, and maybe you want to kind of use this game as a way to explore that more and engage with it in a whole different format, in a safer format, if you feel comfortable with it, you know? So, yeah, I really like the system a lot. I think it's a lot of fun. I need to one day play as a player so I can see how it's like actually using playbooks a bit more intimately. But I like the system a lot. It makes me want to try other Powered by the Apocalypse games for sure.
And I think that, honestly, any role-playing game, you can put yourself in a place where you can explore your own self. And, like, it doesn't have to be this. But I agree that if you're being conscious of your, like, why you're doing it, you could definitely do that. But, I mean, I think that, honestly, even when I was doing therapy with D&D, like, you can do, like, all of the self-exploration with any kind of mechanic that you want. So I don't think it's only on narrative games. I think that any game you can give that narrative flavor to.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with that. I also see what Keisha's saying about it, like, because of how it's written and because it has such a, like, strong, inclusive, queer-coded, you know, this is a safe space for you to explore that. I think it's, like, just very specific to some of those people that are looking for something like that.
The game is so about queer joy.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, and I had just come off of playing in a campaign of Monster Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also very queer, and we had problems though, because we felt like it was on our table, we felt like we were struggling to be more secretive. Like, we were all like, hey, we're all just queer, and like, hey, you know, deal with it. We're all monsters who are queer. And so this game is very refreshing to me in that, like, it's just, that's the world you live in. Now, obviously, we went to a world where it was not the case, but, like, in the setting, the kind of idea is that, yes, this is completely acceptable. Whereas in Monster Hearts, you're kind of hiding. And I see value in both, but I think that the queer joy of Thirsty Sword Lesbians is great and amazing.
Yeah, and I love it, too. This was the first time I played Thirsty Sword Lesbians a few years ago when we did the Voktera one-shot. That was my introduction to narrative TTRPGs, and so again, that was really hard for me coming out of only playing D&D to wrap my head around. There's no dice rolling, there's no, like, real combat, there's no, like, yeah, the roleplay is, like, the story. Like, you know, you roleplay in D&D, I guess. I mean, you do, but the way that it's written, where it literally tells the story as you're playing, was just really hard for me to accept. But I'm really glad I got the warning the first time I played this game that it was very emotional. The way that it's written, like, requires you to use a lot of your emotional capacity, I guess. and I'm glad I got the warning about that, because every time I played this game, I have fucking gone through it, I feel like. It is so intense sometimes.
It can be.
Comes out when you play a game like this, and I've just really enjoyed it now that I have learned it and know what to expect, and like, can kind of rewire my brain to do a more narrative style game. But god, it's so good. Just makes you feel so nice about each other.
Well, you had played narrative TTRPGs before this, because you had played Babies and Broadswords.
But I think I played TSL first. But maybe not.
I don't remember.
Well, now I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Kind of at the beginning of us knowing each other was a couple years ago, so I don't know.
Babies and Broadswords. Shout out to Even Footing Games again for their original game, Babies and Broadswords, which we talk about a lot on this show. But, you know, even Babies and Broadswords is a little bit more like combat mechanics and stuff to it than I would say a game like this does.
Yeah, I mean, conflict mechanics, yeah. Definitely, yes, it doesn't have to be fighting, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
I do want to talk about the conflict mechanics in this, though. You guys already touched on it a little bit, but again, something that I wasn't used to, and that I was actually reflecting on while we were playing this game this time around, that I really like that you can choose to solve your conflict in any way that you can imagine. You have some playbook moves sometimes that will give you suggestions. There are, like, a set of core mechanics that you can use to resolve conflicts, some of which involve fighting, which is where your swords come into play. But most of the time, the game even says, don't solve all your problems with violence. Try and find another way, you know? I really liked that.
If I remember correctly, when we first all played together, we kind of had dance battles.
Yep.
Yeah, we did dance battles.
No sword fighting. It was just dancing.
That's right, it was. Dancing in words. I mean, you could kiss to resolve your conflict.
Yeah.
There's, like, so many options. And again, it's just open-ended, which is great.
Yeah, I like that too. Where TSL is like, oh yes, you can, like, use your swords and maybe, like, hack away some pieces of clothing or something like that, where it's also kind of like this, like, sensual thing too. It's very open about being like, hey, you want to, like, flirt and stuff? Go for it. Yeah, get it, girl, you know? And I love that. But yeah, it also says, you know, you could also just try to talk to the person and just see where that goes. And both was utilized in the game very well, you know, and it was a lot of fun to see how you guys were going to try to resolve any kind of conflict. And it was cool to see that you guys had resorted to not just straight up just trying to be like, yeah, let's just go guns blazing, you know, type of a deal. It was like, oh no, let's actually work around it.
Yeah, but I actually, because of the last time we had played, I went in kind of like, I'm going to get my sword. Like, I got to do this. I haven't gotten to play Thirsty Sword Lesbians with a sword yet.
You just been a thirsty lesbian those
Exactly. I was just I remember in the at some point I was like just like the most clueless, like, romantic headed lesbian. I was a spooky witch, but I was not at all spooky, and I wasn't gonna hurt anybody with a sword, and I was just gonna, like, be clueless and oblivious that anybody liked me and just be smiley and happy. And I was definitely not sword fighting, so this one I was like, nope, I've gotta get my sword out.
Yeah, there was even some inter-party conflict for us in this game. It's also just conflict with the outside world, which is what we've experienced a lot of and the other games we played, but we had some interpersonal conflicts going on between the four of us. Yeah, again, like with how much of a contrast there was between the two sets of our characters, you know, like me and Aaron came from lackluster, so we were like very drab and gray and monotone, you know. We had like kind of made ourselves fit into those square boxes that they're all about, whereas Cedar and Penny were just bright and colorful and crazy and eccentric, and we clashed a little bit on that, which I actually really liked.
I did too. It was a really good moment. And I think that also, like, obviously in the moment, like, we were playing out the two different sides of, like, change and how change happens in a society. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, like, the almost, there is, like, the, okay, we have experienced this and you haven't. And there is, like, the, okay, but you're traumatized by this and you're not being, thinking
clearly.
Like, yeah, and I felt like we both, like, while we both had points, like, it was a really nice way that we butted heads on that.
Yeah, I think that was showcased specifically in the moment where Cedar's character Alpaca went to go save the baker, and Quinn, my character, and Journey, Aaron's character, were like, no, we just need to go to the castle. Like, we're not gonna be able to help that person, you know, they're already lost to the fixer, there's nothing we can do, we just need to go talk to the Empress and change this now, otherwise the system will never change. And Cedar's character Alpaca was like, no way, fuck that, I'm gonna go help this person. Like, regardless of if it changes anything, I have to help them. And that was kind of like a really awesome moment for all of us to be like, exactly what Aaron said, there is another way to do this. We are all looking at it from different sides, but we can all come to the same answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably honestly one of my favorite moments personally for that whole game, because that was not planned at all. It was just like, I mean, yes, I purposely planted like a bakery there because I was like, oh, I know who's this gonna like draw attention to. But I didn't have any plans beyond that. And so it wasn't until Alpaca had like an interaction and everything with this baker. And then I just saw an opportunity. So I was just like, what would happen if this happened? If enforcers maybe witnessed this and caused a bit of a scene. Let's see. And then that whole scene took place. And I was just like, oh, where's my popcorn? I just, y'all are doing the work for me. Please continue. Yes. But it was really good. It was really well done. That was a fantastic part. Y'all need to listen to that.
Y'all need to listen.
It's very
to
worth it.
It. I think all of our roleplay was on point in the moment. Each time we were playing, you know, sometimes I wasn't sure if it was like balanced or like if everybody was getting their time to speak or like roleplay, you know. But then listening back to it again, I was like, oh, I feel like we all got our one big moment throughout the game, you know, where we kind of got to have like our big reveal or like our big emotional breakdown or like our cool playbook move. We all got that. We all had really good one-to-one interactions with each other, and we also had some really great like group interactions with each other.
Yeah.
That I kind of noticed throughout the whole game, all four episodes. What was one of your favorite moments, Erin?
Honestly, I think my favorite might have been when I got lost from everybody else in the bramble. And like I was like the ribbon thing, which is so wild that it had come up right before like the, you know, session before that I had this ribbon. And so that was really cool, and I thought was a really nice moment for my character.
That was a good moment. Yeah,
I liked that too. And it also kind of like introduced more of the lore without us getting like too deep into the rest of the game. You know, we kind of learned that this is like a plague almost, that it's like leeching all the colors and that it's affecting things outside of the city, which was just really cool to kind of expand the story and stuff.
Did you get to say what one of your favorite moments were, Kayla?
No. I actually really liked when Penny's character Violet was talking to like the ghosts outside, and we met like Bob and stuff. I think that was really great. I liked her character a lot too. And I also liked kind of what happened between her, Violet, and Alpaca when Alpaca went to go save the baker, you know, and like Alpaca had this huge speech, which gave me goosebumps. That was so cool. Just about, you know, like enacting change and stuff. And then Violet basically just came there to be her emotional support, which I think just kind of like shifted the story just a little bit, like just enough, you know, where it wasn't just Alpaca was the one going out and doing this. It was Alpaca and Violet, while kind of Joe and Quinn sat back. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And I also like the hot leaf juice. That cracked me up, with literally just a leaf and water.
It was. Here's your tea. Hot leaf. Oh, goodness.
I will say that this one, knowing, like, going into this with two people, I had played with Cedar before, but not anything longer term, and I had never played with Penny before, and I kind of decided that I had been playing a lot of out there characters, and I wanted to play a more reserved character, because I tend to go more silly, and that was, I mean, I thought it was a good stretch to make, and it was challenging, and I really like that, to challenge myself in some way. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's definitely something that is, I think, difficult. I don't know if it's really talked about enough, but yeah, when you're playing characters, it's probably a good chance that usually you kind of play kind of the same kind of characters, and you as in like the collective, we, you, everyone, probably generally tends towards a certain type, you know, because that's what they're more comfortable with. Maybe it's something that they could relate to more, or maybe it's just so off the wall, that's why they lean in that direction. Who knows the reasoning, but, like, typically I could see that, where one would generally play a certain kind of character, and then, yeah, having the challenge of something completely different is definitely...
I think the playbook...
How was it?
I think the playbooks really do help, though. With that kind of idea where you're like, okay, I want to play this kind of character and then I've got this. But yeah, I mean, I think it's challenging for me to play things straight. I mean, pun intended, but also not pun intended, because I tend to be a sillier role player. So it is always hard for me to make sure to always... stay like that. That was a struggle for me sometimes, but I think it was okay.
I think it was appropriate, though, considering everything that we knew ahead of time about Vivacia turning into lackluster and not being able to, like, express yourself.
Yeah,
and I kind of had the same thought process, not because I play too many silly characters. I've played a pretty big range of characters. I've played some, like, bland kind of, like, monotone characters in the past. But it was just, like, I kind of knew that with the group that we had set up that there was going to be a lot of, like, outlandish characters and some big roleplay. And I didn't want to try and, like, top that or, like, be on the same level with that. So that's kind of why I was, like, I want to kind of, like, tone it down a little bit and see, like, what is something a little more, like, reserved for a playbook.
And also, because Kayla and I regularly play together, I think that, like, we know what to expect and how to interact with each other. So it was, like, a safe bet to be the same. Like, even if our players were not, like, being pals or anything, like, they were just kind of from the same place, and so they had a shared history. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very easy for us, because we've been playing in other games for over a year now, that it's easy to know that you can handle that with somebody else and let the other people who you know are going to be a little bit crazier kind of have that crazy energy.
Right. Kind of give it to them. That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, I kind of knew we couldn't all be 100% like that on that side of the spectrum, you know? Not that we didn't give 100%, but that we couldn't all be, like, you know, like, crazy, hyper, full of color, full of...
But you'd miss something, right? You'd miss the reverse. So I think it was good.
Yeah.
And, like, your character had a lot of, like, deeply emotional moments because they couldn't express themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. In the end, I actually really liked the way that playbook got used because, you know, it's written of like, you have an emotional track, and the more that you like repress your emotions and people like call you out on it, the higher it gets until you reach a breaking point, you literally just explode. And I think the way it played out and how we had that kind of like calamitous moment at the end, you know, where we all just kind of had a crying cuddle puddle in the middle of town square, like that was so good. That was so perfect for the story. It really told the story exactly how I think Keisha imagined it would be, you know, where like, here we are all fighting individual battles. Two of us are from this place where we're having some trauma, having to come back and revisit it. And all we want to do is like begin the change so everybody can be their true self. And getting to that point individually was very difficult for everybody, but I really liked it.
Oh, yeah.
So many feels. Especially at the end.
And definitely be very much about the feels. Yes.
It's probably really interesting for you, Keisha, sitting back and just watching it all happen, you know, because you have the vague story in your mind, but seeing how we interact with the world and with each other and what comes up because of it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite things about being the game master or the DM or the keeper or whatever it is, you know, the one who's kind of weaving the world, but then you're watching to see how it transforms because of your players. Like, I think that's such a beautiful thing to witness because you have no idea. You have no idea what direction it's actually going to go. They all take the lead on that, and they are the ones who are actually deciding the ultimate story, the ultimate future of it. And that's one of my favorite parts. Like, yes, I do love having, like, my ridiculous lore that just keeps going deeper and deeper and deeper, where it's like, Keisha, no, surface level. And I'm just like, but my brain, it gotta dig. But despite all that, like, it's still, like, it's collectively everyone is making the story together. And it's awesome. It's a great experience to be a part of, really, in any system. And sharing it with people, I think, it's a very beautiful thing in and of itself. I really enjoy it.
I really felt the collective storytelling of this one. Sometimes I feel like the collective storytelling is between like two or three people, you know, and it's not always everybody is as involved. But in this one, I do feel like we all put a lot into it equally and roleplayed with each other and kind of went like riffed off each other really well.
I think that also has to do with that we were very much, we knew due to scheduling, we were only going to have the four episodes.
Right.
And I think that encouraged, you know, you didn't want to sit back and like, you have to kind of get into it immediately. There's no, you know, time to like slow burn your character through everything. You just have to be your character from the beginning, sort of thing.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that for sure. But we also gave each other space to do that, you know? It wasn't like one person interacting with the world for four episodes with like some side characters behind them. We all got to be a main character, which was really fun. That doesn't always happen that way.
Yeah, definitely. It was a good cast.
It was a great cast.
Amazing.
You did amazing.
Yes, you did.
We're all amazing.
And hopefully next time you can play, Keisha, because this is your third time running it for us.
Is it? Right. Oh, man.
Only my second.
I think it's just my second time running it.
I guess we played in somebody else's game then. Was it Affy? Affy ran it. That was the first one. Yep. Yep.
I was a character. Wow.
Yeah. I thought so. I was confused. How I was like, didn't we that? Play first?
That's so funny. I was a player.
That's
man,
right.
Affy, I hide for myself.
Affy from the Vactera was the one that ran it for us first, and then you got to run a game for them on the Vactera for Christmas.
Yep. Wow. Well, sorry, listeners. I lied to you and myself.
Start the episode over. That was false information.
Scrap everything.
Scrap it all.
I lied. I'm a liar. I am falsifying. I don't know. Fabricator.
A falsifying falser. Well, any other parting thoughts on this game, TSL in general, Powered by the Apocalypse, facts that you want to dump on us some more?
I'm good.
Anything else we want to mention before we close this one out?
I would love if I got to plug the Kickstarter.
No. Yes, of course.
Babies and Broadswords Bathfinder is about to have its very first Kickstarter. You can search Babies and Broadswords on Kickstarter right now and sign up to be notified when we launch sometime next month. So please go do that because it helps the algorithms of Kickstarter know that people like us. They really like us. And then
once it's live, what are your goals and what can people get?
Oh, they'll be able to get physical or PDF copies of the Bathfinder book, which will be just amazingly illustrated by Alana Banks, who is one of our artists and just an amazing human being and dice maker. And at some higher tiers, there are going to be custom Bathfinder dice.
Oh my
which
gosh.
Is really cool.
Oh my gosh.
With, cool.
With little pirate duckies and little diapers and like it's real
cute.
Cute.
I have one of those diaper and ducky dice. Wow.
Yeah, if because you I had you as a Secret Santa. So mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I give those
They're
out.
Very cute. Aww. They're very cute. Well, Keisha is addicted to Kickstarter, so you can count on her to back that, I'm sure.
Yes. I am.
I too probably. Am addicted to Kickstarters. It's sort of a problem. But like there are so many good ideas. Like I just want to support them all.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Plus you get cool stuff out of it.
I know.
And I would love to do cool stuff if we like meet our goals and like custom stickers or like, you know, fun extras that we can put in because that's always so much fun.
Well, where else can people find Babies and Broadswords and Even Footing Games in general, Erin?
At our website, evenfootinggames.com, on all socials at Even Footing Games. Yeah, those are basically where we're around at.
You can get Babies and Broadswords on DriveThru, right?
Yes.
And on Amazon. If you must.
I know. Yeah, and you can also order it from your indie game store of choice. Mm. Like they can order it through Ingram Spark, so
the PDF is super cheap and you get some really cool stuff in there. And the physical books are really good quality, you guys. I have the original one and also the Call of Cthulhu
yeah.
module that they wrote. And it's really, the print quality is really nice. The art is super cool. We would recommend. You guys have probably heard it before on the show. Go listen to one of the Babies and Broadswords games if you want more information.
Yep. This one's going to be all piratey in their brand new boat mechanics. And you don't have to have the other books to play this one. You just...
Great.
So you can just pick up this one. Not, I mean, if you wanted, there will be more stuff in the other ones that you can use. But yeah, you'll need is this one. So
that's awesome. I love that. Yeah. Well, go check all those out. Be sure to follow Even Footing Games on the socials. Go make sure that you're signed up on the Kickstarter so that way they can get some leverage on the front page and get some more backers. Back them if you're so inclined and get some super cool diapers. Bird ducky dice. If you're at a higher tier. Yeah, thanks again, Erin, for joining us and for playing TSL with us and teaching us all about Power to the Apocalypse, schooling us and indie publishers. I really appreciated it.
No problem.
This has been another episode of Potions and Potpourri. You know where to find us on all of our usual socials. Typically, TikTok and Instagram are our most engaging ones, so you can get better responses and cooler content from there. This has been a blast. Thank you guys for your time and for doing a little wrap-up episode with us.